Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we are more than perfectly delighted to welcome the return of Diana Beresford Kroger. She journeyed from being an orphan raised by druids to becoming one of the world's top medical biochemists, rewedding science and guiding Celtic wisdom in her dedication that we all resolve climate change by humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius. Her books include The Sweetness of a Simple Life, The Global Forest, Arboretum Borealis, A Lifeline of the Planet, and it goes on and on. Her latest book is To Speak for the Trees, My Life's Journey from Ancient Celtic Wisdom to a Healing Vision of the Future of the Forest. Her website is DianaBeresfordKroger.com, and she says, "Radio holds the ear and fires the imagination, so we light our collaborative kinship fires to quell the conflagration." Welcome, Diana Beresford Kroger.
Hello, welcome to you. I'm delighted to be able to be heard by so many people.
Yes, no, it's a wonderful thing. And then just to put a little more divination in, I did look up your birthday astrological chart. There are metaphors for each degree of the zodiac, and the image for your Venus in Leo, with lots of company, is children swinging beneath the shade of a huge oak tree, the borrowed strength of ancient traditions, the roots of all spiritual traditions in nature mysticism. Isn't that deft?
That's really extraordinary, because I'm the last child of the Castle of Ross. I'm the last child of the O'Donoghue family, and when my family was killed, my inheritance was given to me in the form of wisdom and knowledge.
That's
and
so.
I was 12 years old.
Well, and I loved when we spoke earlier today. You said you have a telepathic thread to people, and I go, we are convened by that. I love being embraced by your telepathic thread, as all of our listeners are now. And you speak of the triad of the Gaelic world: the body, mind, and soul.
And in that, if you want to communicate with me, go into silence in your mind. Go into that stillness of silence. There's all kinds of Gaelic words for that. On Sia, Siacon, there are all kinds of Gaelic words for that silent thing you hold within yourself. Then thread it onto me, and you will remember what I say. This is very important, actually, because when I was finished the Brehon Laws, when I was finished doing the Brehon Wardship, I was the last child to be given this ancient knowledge. And I was told by, at that time, there would be no more after me. I was given the knowledge aus Gaelga, that means in Irish. And I really kind of didn't believe that, that a child, you know, then I was 15 when I was given all this medical knowledge and knowledge of the laws of Ireland and the laws of the Celtic culture. I didn't believe it, but it has turned out to be true, and it's kind of extraordinary. And I have one of the longest pedigrees in the world. It's called in Gaelic a Brehonus. I have the longest Brehonus, which spreads back into 3,000 years.
No, that's so wonderful, and I can't resist just bringing in a little bit of your chart, because you have irresistible eloquence, and your Saturn quintiles Chiron, which is to translate the ancient traditions of nature mentoring into now, thank you for all of us, into accessibility. And it's also that you have irresistible eloquence. I love the New York Times did that splendid piece, and all praise to your ally, Stuart Bernstein, because he killed us with wonderful things. But it says in that article, before the Times reporter Kara Buckley wrote an article about her, Diana Beresford Kroger told Miss Buckley, "What you must do is lean against a tree before you write the piece." And Miss Buckley did. I love that.
Yeah, she did. And the wisdom of that comes to you. You know, I mean, the funny thing is that you look at yourself in the mirror and you have your own DNA. But a tree's DNA is very, very like yours, except for two bases. That's the only difference. It has all of the other equipment to do all kinds of extraordinary things, and indeed it does. It does, it does, it does. The most important reaction in the world, that's bar none, is the photosynthetic reaction, and it's happening everywhere today on the planet. What it is, wherever the sun is shining, it shines on the leaves of the trees, and the leaves have got green chlorophyll, and the green chlorophyll somehow can pick up the radiation from the sun, the UV from the sun, and take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and split it into two, into carbon and oxygen. And baby doll, what you're breathing right now, listening to me, is oxygen, because without it you would not live. It comes from the trees and the forest. Hey, that's fantastic.
Yes. And you often speak about how the forest protects the great oceans of the world. Today is Ocean Day. So we're covering everything.
God, I didn't realize that. Well, let me tell you. Let me tell you a story. Let's pretend you have a tree in front of you. Okay, let's pretend any old. It could be a big tree, a wonderful tree, an ancient forest tree. Very few have seen these extraordinary colossals of the world. Well, you know, you dawdle along as a child, okay? And the leaves fall in the autumn and they hit the ground and you think, why is this happening? What the heck is going on here? Why is that tree losing its leaves? Well, there's something else going on in this world. The leaves hit the ground, and then the rain hits the ground, and it dissolves the humic acid and the fulvic acid out of leaves. Now, if you're a gardener like I am, a total lunatic with all my arboreta and everything, you need that humic acid in the soil, and it travels in the soil because it's water-soluble. It's a very large molecule, about 1 million in molecular weight. It goes zoom, zoom, zoom down through the soil and into the rivers and into the lakes and then out into the great oceans of the world. Well, what fulvic acid and humic acid does is really an extraordinary thing. Out in the oceans, especially in California, you've got fabulous, fabulous seaweeds and all kinds of algae out in the ocean. The algae require something really unusual that's common on the land and is in scarcity in the sea, and it's called iron. And fulvic acid picks up iron. Humic acid picks up iron like a big claw, and that in chemistry is called chelation. It's a chelating molecule, and boing, 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 it goes out into the sea. But the algae are looking for that iron, and when they get the iron, they use it as a catalyst for their nitrogenase enzymes. And those nitrogenase enzymes work at night without the sun, and they build protein. And it is only because of the humic acid and fulvic acid they get big and strong and they divide. And that's the feeding foundation of the ocean for all creatures in the ocean, the great whales being at the top of the level. I mean, you could make a child's book out of this, and it's fantastic for a child.
Yeah, no, well, in your prodigious output, and then you assign tasks to whoever's listening as well, and you say, you know, iron, without it, we wouldn't have, without the iron from the trees, we wouldn't have whales or porpoises, and then you said, your favorite otters.
Oh, I love otters.
Aren't you quite like an otter? You are quite like an otter. Yeah, no, they're just so darling, and they're holding hands while sleeping and floating along.
Yes, we must protect them.
Right. Well, it is, you know, but before us is really the backstage gods are saying, okay, humans, all you have to do is completely redesign the human cultural interface with nature. That's the task right now, and then we'll have some other things for you to do. But that's it, really, and your whole life you've been dedicated to being a cultural ambassador on behalf of what you love, yeah?
Yes, and I've made a lot of sacrifices for this. I mean, I refused a professorship of medicine to do this. And what I did is I was offered a very, very, you know, very, very strong profile in the academic world, and also with groups of people across the world who are Nobel winners. I refused that. And I decided, because I was told under the Brehm law that the time of now will be a time of great danger for people. And I, you know, as I got older, I saw this really happening. And I thought, when I was offered the professorship, I thought, to heck with this. I took a whole week off, walked up and down my driveway, walked up and down all over the Arboretum to think about it. And I thought, no, this is important. I will do this. This is important for people, and I will keep doing it until people understand that we've got to look after the globe, our planet, our green planet, because it is unique.
Yes, you say bring it to now to deal with the burden upon us.
Yeah,
the precious burden to protect as much life as possible. So yes, but of course also because you are the between worlds cross pollinating person. You are the science and myth reunified, right? And there's a pretty good BBC radio series just came out on called The Witch, and it's pretty good. But they mentioned that there were no witch trials in Ireland because the paganism was sufficiently strong. So is that part of how Druid wisdom?
No, they're a bit incorrect about that. Because they are a bit incorrect about that, because a witch is in the English language. The letter W does not even occur in the Gaelic language. We do not have W. We have 19 letters in the Gaelic alphabet, and W is not one of them. It's an English word. The concept of the Druidic culture was common to the Celtic civilization, and that was way before even the word witch was invented. The Celtic civilization went from Ireland into Europe, France and Spain, and into the north of Africa, into the Galata of Turkey, and then on into actually Asia Minor. It was a huge civilization. And the Druid in Gaelic, because I'm saying now, Tommy the Kind House Gael guy, I'm telling you, I'm speaking in Gaelic now. The word Druid in Gaelic comes from Dreach, which means magic. And Dreach the Druid in Gaelic means the play and the art of magic. And the people who had Druidic training, they trained for 17 years. And also the Druids were also called Aluna in the Gaelic language when there was a number of them together. And they were masters of their art. And the Druids in some instances were also medicine, of men of medicine, and women of medicine also. And at the time of Christ they could do C-sections. They had regulations for their hospitals. They were very, very erudite in medicine. And they indeed went into Rome, and they spoke Gaelic, was the common language in Rome, below Greek and Latin. And all of the big bosses in the Roman Empire wanted to have these people for their great wisdom.
Yes, and you're bringing it all alive, and then here we are convening right at this, you know, huge conflagration, and there you are in Canada, right, with your Noah's Ark of trees. You said one square mile. I think that's your phrase, which is wonderful.
One square mile. And, I live in one square mile of trees. Yes.
Yeah. So and how is it where you are?
Well, I'll tell you now what I'm doing. The climate change will bring huge swings. I consider myself to be a citizen of the world, not necessarily a citizen of Canada. And indeed, I'm living on the edge of society in a way, really. So what I have is this huge research garden, and the research garden is the Zone 3 garden. It's a very cold garden, which is a great advantage, because that means I can hold the colder specimens up here. And when the swing of temperature starts to swing into the heat, then my seeds and my plants can actually be transplanted down into the United States. Now, for instance, if you wanted to repair the forest, let's say in California, you could take any of the material from my garden, and indeed the sacred tree of the First Nation would be one of them. It is called Petalia trifoliata crescidifolia. That tree was the medicine species of the First Nations of all of North America. And it is a synergistic compound, and there's only five of them in the world. And you give somebody some treatment for cancers, for instance, and what you're doing is you give them a tiny amount of treatment and then give them this synergistic compound, and it becomes an enormous treatment for cancer. So I give you one aspirin, and it becomes 100 aspirin, and that's what the medicine men knew about here on this continent a long, long time ago. And I found that tree. I was swung out of the helicopter in a leather brace. I was looking for the tree, and I gridded 200 miles, crisscrossed 200 miles, and I found that tree, and it's under armed guard now down in Texas.
Hmm. Okay.
For the benefit of everybody. That is not just for the rich people. That is for you folks and me folks.
And it will do fine in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Now, what you have to have in Texas, you have to have a shale mountain, and the mountain has to be 1,200 feet. And a lot of the First Nations went to that area for summer. We call it summer vacation, but it really wasn't. They went down there for the summer to get the summer species, and they would collect this and then go back up the continent again. It's foolish to think that the First Nations people didn't walk. They walked everywhere. They were magnificent at walking, and indeed they had medicines to promote their ability to walk and use their joints.
Hmm. Yes, right. Reforging our alliances with plants, of which you are, you know, ambassador. Yeah. And then you mentioned in your interview with Jane Fonda, another friend of this show. Hi there.
Oh,
but you had a wonderful soul connection. That was really, really darling. She is marvelous.
Woman. She is a marvelous woman. She's a treasure of the United States. And I'll tell all the women, this is a little secret. I said to Jane, I said, Janie, your hair is gorgeous. What do you do? I'm going to pull it. I pulled her hair because I wanted to see if she was wearing a wig or not. And she gave a squeak. And I'll tell you, it's real hair, and she is marvelous. She is a real person. I'm very bad.
That's good. So. We love your playful. Well, that's your otter self, isn't it? That's right. The otter would pull the hair just to tug and see. And either way, if it came off or didn't, both are cute. That's great. But in your conversation with her, you were speaking of these many things. And you also said, you know, the forests provide 60% of the oxygen, the oceans 40%. And then you said about drought. But if there's drought on the land... Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Now, you had that. You know, the last time I was down in California, I was speaking down there, and I imagine I'll be down there again pretty soon with this new book coming out. But in California, I was supposed to plant a tree. Well, I tell you, they gave me a shovel, and they gave me the tree, and I hopped up and down on that shovel. Do you think I could break the earth in California? It was so dry, we could not plant that tree. So... It's very scary. Well, what that means is that the leaf reduction is reduced. It means the fulvic acid is reduced, the humic acid is reduced, and there's a reduced iron going out into the ocean, which means starvation in the ocean. And we can't have that. We have to get the sequoia dendrons, we have to get the sequoia trees back into the land in California, because they are a firewall, and I mean a firewall. They condense water in the huge mass of the trees, and they keep the trees very liquid, and it picks up moisture from the mist of the sea from early in the morning until late at noontime. And you've got to get those trees back in. to save the land, to save the people, to save the food. And, you know, when I was down there, the governor of California, he was hopping around, and I really wanted to see him. And somebody promised me, oh, yeah, we'll get an interview with him. Well, God bless us and save us. The man had slipped out from underneath my hands, because if I had got hold of him, he would be planting trees. He'd be planting sequoias, and I would have him. Because when I was down there, I generated enough money for 19 kids to go through Berkeley. And their full education, and we did all kinds of stuff. So he should have been there, because the kids were there and they wanted to do this. So next time around, for heaven's sake, please turn up.
Yes. No, that's right. No, we're doing it now. We're, as you said, radio is magic. We're laying out, you know, imagination lays the tracks for the reality train, so the governor will greet you and again plant trees. And yeah, and then we've done a whole bunch of shows on beavers, right, and cooperating with beavers part of that dynamic, and that they too fireproof the land, you know, and contribute. Yeah. So sequoias, beavers, everything in cahoots.
When for me, I'm a botanist too, you know, I've got a hell of a pile of degrees, like, you know, I go into the Muir Woods, and, you know, I'm asking all of you people in California, go into the Muir Woods. Mae Monroe, who's in charge of the Muir Woods, she's a fantastic woman. She's a tiny little woman, but she's like dynamite. She'll bring you around, and I'll tell you, it's like bringing somebody around a cathedral. You go in there, and they haunt you. They come there, and now I'm going to talk to the men, the male listeners of this program, and the women who have husbands and boyfriends and sons. Listen up to this, please. You take these gentlemen into the woods, and you start to do a little bit of camping, and you get your gentlemen mostly undressed by the time of the early morning, and please get them out there when the mist is there, up until noontime. Those sequoias produce a compound called taxodione, which is in the atmosphere. It is very, very good for the male parts of a man and prevents prostate cancer. And will you please get your gentlemen out there? You don't have to have them totally naked here. No, you don't. And when they are loose clothing on, and their sleeves and their head and their legs exposed, no washing that night. No, you go into the following day and you keep that taxodione on your skin, and that actually causes cancer, the cancer material in the prostate, to commit suicide. So please go and camp. You've got something fantastic at your doorstep. Get in there and do it.
So just to repeat this important public service announcement, Diana, so you take your almost completely naked men into the sequoia tree forest. Is that where you go?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and walk slowly. And you know, while I'm about it, let me go the whole 9 yards here. When you're walking, you gentlemen, when you're walking, hold yourself very upright, okay? I want you to breathe deeply so you get the taxodione into the lower part of your lungs, not the upper bronchi, down into the lower part of your lungs, and walk very slowly. And when you are walking, will you please pick up pieces of debris of these trees themselves, like the cones or pieces of a twig or something, and handle them in your hands. Because some of these twigs and you know, left off from the tree will cure flesh-eating diseases. So don't be too clean. I know that's not a bother for a lot of men. They can roll in, you know, they roll in the dirt. But a lot of gentlemen are very, very clean and very precise. Don't be so darn precise in these woods. Go and hog in there and get yourself with lots of taxodione on your body. And I'll tell you something, because I would be so happy if you would do that. Because my research, I've done a huge amount of research on cancer research. Please do that. I'm the person who made the tissue transplanting and all of those kind of organ transplanting. I've done the background for oxygenation in that. So I kind of know what I'm talking about. So Yay. Please, please do it. For me. But, do it just for me.
No, that's so wonderful. And I just want to tie it to everything, because when I first hosted you, I can't remember, way back, I think this is our maybe third or fourth time. But the things I said, you live in my inner council always as a reference. And you'd said, you know, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter because of the aerosols. Yeah?
Yeah. Let's talk about the pines now, because in California, you've got wonderful pine trees too. And now for the ladies, and also the gentlemen, mostly the ladies, because women have got a lot of breast cancer these days because of pesticides and God knows so on. And actually, the smoke fumes will carry pesticides on them right now. So that's why you're asked to wear a mask. So, but go into the pine trees again. And now you relax. And you go in for the minimum amount of time of 15 minutes. Please do that. And what you have in the air, now you have to have temperatures in the 80 degrees to have the pinenes, aerosols are produced in the airways around the trees. And it's alpha pinene and beta pinene. And what you have to do is, if possible, not wash yourself the day before, so that you've got kind of a bit of an oily skin on you. And the alpha pinene and beta pinene go into the oil in your skin, into the sebaceous glands in your skin, then into your cardiovascular system, and it speeds in your cardiovascular system, and it gives you a protection, listen to this now, to all cancers for the next 30 days. Now, if you were living in California, I would advise you on every day in every month, that's 12 months in the year, to take a trot around your super valuable pine trees, the Bishop's Pine and all those different pine trees you have, once a month, and you get a protection to cancers.
Ah, maybe, because the other thing I remember, and we'll come back to pine because that's so important, but you also said, and if you take a walnut and crush it, ladies, and rub it on your inner forearm, that will protect you from breast cancer, you
breast
said.
Cancer.
And I did that. You know, it smells so delicious, like lemony, and so many people are going, oh, we never did that before.
Yeah. And if you've got little sausages, I mean, if you've got grandchildren or young children, please bring the young children with you and give them a green, now I'm talking about a green acorn, I mean a green walnut, not a brown one, because the brown one is an older one, a green walnut, and give it to your child to hold. And they have little sweaty hands when they're young little sausages. So give it to the kid to hold for about a half an hour. Ask them to do that, and it gives them a protection to early childhood leukemia.
Oh, this is so wonderful.
Yeah, and the compound, for those of you who are cognizant with all of the with the compounds in medicine, the medicinal compound is ellagic acid. And if you're tracking ellagic acid, it is the Japanese that discovered the link for that within this whole system. And North America is the kingpin for these forests.
Yes. So that you know, and then you'd also said, you know, if you're lonely, sit under a willow tree. Salicylic.
Yeah. Now, can I talk about that? Because our young people are having a hell of a time right now. What with COVID and then trying to get through university and trying to get through schools, it's actually very depressing for those young kids. And if you've got young teenagers, please be kind to them, because this is not of their making. This is of our making. So please try to be compassionate to these kids. Okay, but you've got to bring them for a little walk. Any one of the willows, that you have many, many willows, all different kinds of willows. I mean, the Chinese willow, the weeping willow, is very common in California, and actually all over North America it's very common. So try to bring the kid, if they're depressed or anxious or are looking toward doing exams and getting really anxious about exams, bring them out for a walk. And where you bring them is to a willow tree. And the best one is a willow tree where there's some water running. Willows love to grow on very damp ground, so you will get, there's about 22 aerosols that get lifted off the willow tree, and the willow tree produces these aerosols. They're pretty well all water soluble. So the air produces a humidity around, the water produces humidity around the air around it, so you get a better penetration of these 22 compounds into the skin. They are all anti-anxiety compounds that are in the skin. They are all anti-pain compounds, like aspirin. Delta salicylic acid is one of them. And all, and also anti-inflammatory compounds. And they keep your cortisol levels down.
All right, we're going to pause there to take a very, very short musical break. But anti-inflammatory, we want to come right back in. Our wonderful guest today is Diana Beresford Kroger, keeper of the boreal forest, and as though trees put on a human form, and are talking to us now. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tallest cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our perfect... perfect for now, more than perfect for now, guest is Diana Beresford Kroger. And you can see so many awards and so many degrees and so many books that she's written. You can find those on kpfa.org or coyotenetworknews.com to see all of it, you know, and wonderful, wonderful things. And her website is, well, there's Call of the Forest. We might want to come to that. Also Diana Beresford Kroger. com. You can just Google her and it'll take you to many, 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 many things. But yes, we were just on inflammation.
Loneliness and solitary behavior is a cause of inflammation. Think about what COVID has done to everybody, because we all had to stay in our own homes. We had to mind our own business to stay alive. So inflammation is on the increase.
Right. Yeah. And another guest who will return at some point, Dr. Rupa Meyer, has written a book with a co-author on Inflamed. And she does tie, you know, COVID and colonialism and the fires burning and all of it together. She said that when her doctor colleagues in San Francisco, got COVID and lost their sense of smell, but all of them could smell, the only thing they could smell was forests burning.
Oh my God,
that's
really something. And let me tell you something else about the forest burning, about the smoke. And she may not have mentioned that in her book, and I'm not sure, but I'm being a bit rude by saying this, but Nish, you'll have to forgive me. The smoke does something else, actually, in the air, and it is a universal phenomenon. What it does is it releases, it has the ability to release chlorine ions in the atmosphere. And those of you who are atmospheric chemists, you will note that the release of chlorine is a very, very active molecule. Chlorine is, with its 7 valencies, it pops and it destroys the ozone layer. So the more fires you have, the least ozone you have in the atmosphere for protection from UVA, UVB, and UVC. So that's another bad side effect of the smoke.
Right, you know, and even, you know, I'm in Washington, D.C., talking to you in Canada and talking to everybody in California and on the web as well. Hi there, everybody. So, yeah, it's not like New York City, which is red air, but it's very smoky. Even my animals are under the bed, you know.
Yeah, they're having trouble. You know, they're having trouble. Yeah. Let me add another thing, too, that I've observed over in my research garden. What is happening is because too much forest has come down all over the world, not just here in North America, everywhere. And what has happened is that the photosynthetic reaction, which was in balance up to now to produce 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, plus or minus up and down a bit depending on the seasons, but now we have it up in 414 or so on and so forth, the carbon dioxide, that reaction is not working. So what we have right now is an excess of humidity in the air, in the atmosphere. And what that does in the winter is something really, really interesting. What it does, it makes snowflakes and snow much heavier. And because the snow is much heavier, the snowflakes are larger. It's taking the branches down from trees because of the weight. They come to the ground. It's happening all over the world. And then you have the debris on the ground, and then you have the wall of lightning coming up the continent, and guess what? You have your fires going. So again, it's all backtracked to climate change, carbon dioxide, which can so easily be taken out of the atmosphere. And it's about time somebody emptied a bit of money into research for this.
And say that again. How do we reverse engineer the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere back into the ground and the water?
Well, all you have to do, all our cars are run on petroleum, okay? Think of petroleum, it's just like a necklace. Carbon, 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 CH, carbon, OH. It's just like a necklace of carbon, right? So when you break it down, it's oxidation. You go break it down and you get heat out of it and you get your car goes like hell, right? So all you have to do is do the reverse. And what you're doing is you're reclaiming the carbon cycle out of the atmosphere. So you take the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and you join the carbon together to form petroleum. And do it to the point where you have that balance in the atmosphere of 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide. For God's sake, we can do it. I mean, if we can come along with quantum computers, which is happening, and photonic computers, we can do this.
No, I love that. You are. It's like, how did we get here? And let's look at the conflagration. And then you are informed. You're the embodiment of what Wendell Berry says: be jaunty, even though fully informed. And it's like, that's right. That's right. It's like that. It's like we can do this. Absolutely, yeah. This rousing and you like a tuning fork are humming this in all of our hearts, going, all right, we can do this, right? Because you have a plan, right? You have a plan in your and your wonderful steward had guided me to many things. But first in Call of the Forest, which is the film about you, and callofthe forest.ca. Stuart Chunton.
It can be streamed too, by the way.
Oh, excellent. And Stuart says, there folks can find a tree guide that will help them carry out Diana's wishes, as you would have it, but actually helps them find the trees that need to go back into the ground in their part of North America, tells them why and what for and how to plant. And you say, get a shovel, plant a tree, acorns, plant natives, right?
Yeah, and come here, I must tell you something funny about this. I did, you know, when I was doing the callofthe forest.ca, the app to go with it, I had to write a book which translates Latin, which would translate the Latin of science into just ordinary, common, everyday English. And then I had a huge amount of material that had to be sent to the people who were putting the app together. So what I did is I took a roll of wallpaper, right? And I wrote all of the connections on the wallpaper in pencil and put it into kind of like a cartoon thing that you send drawings across in the mail to send it out to them. All these kids, these are all PhDs in designing websites. So I sent it to them, and I thought they'd send it back to me because I couldn't think of any other way to do it other than a roll of wallpaper. Well, they were thrilled. So I think that I'm the first person to write computers on a piece of wallpaper.
That's fabulous. That is right. The ancient meets the modern everywhere in your dreeing, your weird, playing your role in destiny. And that you have and you're speaking yourself and humming it, yeah, in us too, that you have two Mercuries, the capacity to translate rich, ancient, complex language and language, yeah, magic, druidic language magic, into cultural vernacular, yeah, which you're doing, yeah, now and always. Yeah. It's so I'm scribbling notes. I'm gonna have to listen to this show again. It's wonderful because it adds to, you know, what you bestow is really wonderfully cumulative. I love also that you'd mentioned that Richard Powers, author of The Overstory, right?
Yeah.
Right, and he had said he based his character Patricia on you, and you've released me from my harumphitude because I'm like, well, what do you think about the fate of that character in the book? You go, it's fiction, never mind. I go, okay. So, but he says,
no, let me tell you the coding that Richard had used. Okay, coding,
yep,
for a woman, an Irish woman in England, who is a bit derogatory, but Richard didn't know this. An Irish woman is called Patricia in England. And an Irish man is called a Paddy. It's a bit,
right,
derogatory. All right. We don't do things like that anymore, but he used... And then, of course, my name is Beresford, and then he used Westerwood. You see? So there's,
right,
the coding for my name. And, you know, he just went galloping ahead. And it's a shame that he didn't... I know it's a book of fiction, you know, I know that. But it's a shame he didn't kind of gasbag with me beforehand. But what happened...
Yeah.
When the book was not ready to be published yet, I was sent a copy of it as a joke, and from New York.
Well, wait.
And somebody, a good joke to pull my leg. And they said,
okay,
with a letter going with it, they said, Diana, do you recognize that woman in this book? And of course it was me, and I thought it was a hoot.
Right. Well, here's what he says, and I'm releasing any grudge I had against him, because it's a fabulous book. I just say it's fabulous 3/5, like Avatar the movie, fabulous 3/5. Anyway, but nonetheless, he redeems himself here by saying, Patricia's career as a patient outsider and her temperament as a controversial yet strong-willed proclaimer of deep tree truths are based in part on the remarkable Diana Beresford Kroger, whose books have been a call to humanity to treat trees with the awe due to immensely resourceful creatures that we still know so little about. So good for you. Good for you, Richard Powers. That's good. And it is fiction. Yeah, well, it's a fabulous 3/5 fabulous,
yeah,
book,
yeah,
right? And it's all the more wonderful that it is based on you, and you didn't mind that, you know, there's an unfortunate fate for the character. Okay, all right.
If you can't laugh at yourself, you've got a problem.
Oh well, that's definitely true. Yeah, no, it's right. Yeah. Then you're the new patriarchy, right? Feminists,
yeah,
who lose,
right,
sense,
right,
of humor are the new patriarchy. Yeah, no, loss of humor is a key indication of outsourced authority, and we need to get our goats back and our insource our authority back in here. So yes, so that's super charming. And then, you know, you have your big book coming out. It doesn't have its title yet, but it is dedicated to climate change, right?
Yes, 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 absolutely. And what I've done with this big book, honestly, really, to be honest with you, I have a certain amount of kind of sacred thinking in it, in a way. I mean, I ended by saying, a life is a vestment, wear it with care and with love. That's the very last piece at the end of the book that I put. And I thought, now, if these boys don't like my saying that, and if they don't like that I think all life is sacred, everybody out there, you are sacred to me. Your life is important to me. I thought, no, well, then they don't have to publish that blinking book. So I said to them, well, if you don't like that, I have a lot of publishers down in New York who would give their eye teeth to have my books. So So don't worry about it. Well, by God, they started clustering around me. Oh, no, no, we want it, we want it, we want it. So I won that game, and that game is that you're important. The public is important.
Yes, no, 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 you're irresistibly eloquent. Who could deny you? You're jaunty, informed, and irresistibly eloquent, so that your insights hum in all of us, as is happening now through Radio Magic. You know, everything you say is humming in our hearts, which is, that's great. And so because, you know, here's just another little wonderful piece, which is when we began this show, 29 degrees Virgo was rising in the east. And when you were born, the moon was at 29 degrees of Virgo. And its image is, for that degree, is a woman calmly cleaning the house in the midst of an earthquake, an emergency call. One's attention goes to matters at hand, everyone rising to the occasion with enthusiasm and calm, right? That's very you, right? Well, here we are.
That's me,
right?
Yeah, that is me. When I do surgery, because when I do surgery, I have steady hands, and you concentrate into that surgery, and you get it done.
Hmm.
Yep.
So I didn't know that you were an actual surgeon as well.
Yes, you do. I have a diploma in experimental surgery. You know,
excellent.
You can't. My all my work is on oxidation reduction in the heart, and it's my background is flow dynamics in the heart, and I have published all of my work in the top journals in the world, and it's the flow dynamics. Let's say, for instance, if you have a problem in one part of your heart. And we use microspheres, tracking microspheres in the heart, tiny, tiny little beads in the heart to do the flow dynamics. So if you're on certain medication, I can tell you where it affects it in the heart. And also the artificial blood that I made actually helps the heart. And so if you're doing any heart surgery, you can run this artificial blood, which is non-typing, by the way, into the heart and into all of your organs. And now the work that I had done is the American Army are working on it down in Texas.
Hmm. I've did the folklore part, but not the science part. You're inspiring us to wed them completely, but just back to the realm, because as you know, you are Mega Leo, Sun in Leo, next to Vesta, keeper of the hearth, dedicated to community well-being, next to Pluto, on a mission, next to Venus, again, nature, spirit, mysticism, next to Mercury, dashing, mobility, all in Leo, and Jupiter in Leo. All Leo is the heart, right? Leo is the heart.
Leo is the heart. Leo is the heart.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, our word charisma comes from charis, from which we get charitable and Eucharist and Cordelia and Shakespeare. So true charisma is a charitable heart. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. You and I should go down the hall sometime and have a good conversation about this.
Yes. I look forward to, you know, more and more and more. It's the confluencing of allies. We're all in this dream together. Yes. Well, who brought what, right? Who brought what to this dynamic? And that's so wonderful. Let's see where shall we go?
I'll tell you something very, the mysticism part. I'll tell you something really strange that happened when I was in Japan. The head priest of the Shinto religion took me up to the top of Mount Kurama, okay? And I asked him, he asked me if I had any requests. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and we went up to the top of Mount Kurama, and he had all his vestments on, and he took some ancient manuscript, and he unfolded it. And what I asked him to do is to pray, he and I would pray for world peace. And I felt that I was not as holy as he was. So I knelt outside of his little cabin, a tiny, tiny, beautiful cabin, while he unfolded the manuscript and he lit the candles for the beginning of prayer. And it was like I didn't understand his what he was saying. Of course, I didn't. It was ancient Japanese. But it flooded over us. And when we were finished, what happened was that his vestments held an extraordinary kind of light, and there was this extraordinary smell of wonderful perfume in the air. And I said to him, up at the top of this mountain, I said to him, do you see the colors in your vestment? And he said, no, I don't. Mm. And I said, do you get those smell, the smell of all of the trees wafting up to us? He said, no, I don't. And what he did is he caught me by my hands, and he held me by my hands, and he said, you great spirit. And we went down from the mountains after that, and for the whole of the day, the head of the Shinto religion looked after me.
Hmm, beautiful. Beautiful. No, that's so wonderful. And your willingness, you know, we say magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, everything.
Yeah.
You know, and then just for the fun of it, Jupiter right now, well, when if you can see, if any of us can see the sky at night due to the smoke and all, but Venus is very, 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 very bright. And when you look at Venus after sunset and she's dancing with Mars, you, Diana Beresford Kroeger,
yeah,
get to look at it and go, that's where Venus was when I was born, right? Just so you're looking at space, you're looking backwards in time. It's super fabulous. You know, and you are, you know, the part of us, you know, and everybody has something to contribute, and we want to get to your rousing exhortation, but the part of us that is illuminating, you know, and you're so wonderfully spirited and feisty that we go, right, Inquisition over, terrible things still going on, but safer for everyone to come out in their full selves, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You have to be, because nobody has on their tombstone, I'm sorry, I was hiding from everybody.
Oh, yes, there's that, right. Well, and and you're not, well, you live in solitude while you live with your wonderful...
I am a monastic person, and I guard my time. My time is the most precious thing I have, and I guard that very, very carefully. But now I have to speak. Now, I was told by the prophets in Ireland and when I was a young child, and now my speech is necessary, my full speech is necessary to go to people because they need it. I was told that.
Yes. Right. And it's also like, so you are, we say, you know, solitude is freedom, hiding is prison, right? So you're not hiding at all.
No.
You have your solitude, and then just for all of us, it's like solitude and hiding can look the same, but they feel different. And then just for all of us, just for the fun of it, let's all just throw hiding into the cauldron and see what's left.
Yes,
right,
that's
just in case.
Yeah. And I start every single day of my life with a poem.
Oh, great.
Every single morning there is poetry, and I hold the poetry in front of me as a scientist, because it opens my imagination, and you're not worth your butter if you're a scientist if you have a closed mind.
Right. And don't the spirits and the invisibles, you know, love language and eloquence and poetry rhythm and rhyme?
Yes. Yes, yes. The muses, yes, they do.
They do.
They do.
Well, this call and response, you know, and how do we, you know... Well, do you go around and you talk to all your trees, your 1 square mile of boreal forest that you're, you know, steward of?
Well,
do you greet them in the morning?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing right now. The cucumber tree, Magnolia cuminata, which is the northern magnolia. There's only two of them left in Canada, and I have been working for 30 years to break break those trees and try and propagate them. And I have 7 trees growing as of this year. And those I talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and again, you know, for us humans to be humbled by the intelligence of our kin, our flora fauna kin, you know, that, you know, late great Stephen Buhner, botanist guest on the show, but said, you know, again, the intelligence of trees, if a tree is nibbled by a beetle, it'll put up with it for a little bit until it crosses a border, and this is a resonant theme for us all, and then it will manufacture the pheromone that attracts the predator of that beetle.
Yeah.
But it will also put out a public service announcement to the other trees. Rude beetle coming, start making the pheromone. So,
yeah.
Again, we want to
be. And as a matter of fact, the intelligence of trees, if he were or I were to understand that, if he were or I were to understand how water is transpired in trees, we would have a Nobel Prize tomorrow. But we do not know it. No university on this planet has produced a scholar who can give an answer to that.
Right. Well, I'm getting feedback here, but you're so compelling, you know, even with the New York Times reporter and with us this hour, you know, guiding us. And when I was part of a semi-genuine and then half crackpot kind of crackpot mystery school in England, but it said to go spend time with a tree or a rock, something, and give it energy and offer a deal and say, all right, I give you this, and then if you tell me your story, I will tell it for you. Is that a good to-and-fro dance? Yeah.
I mean, for the First Nations, all of the First Nations, considered the shape of a rock, let's say a rock, a mountain, or a piece of rock, or whatever, to be sacred. But then think about the geometry of it. Think about how intricate geometry is, and how intricate geometry is for building a pyramid or something like that, or getting man into space for something like that. It's an extraordinary thing. So we look at these very simple things like a leaf structure or a rock, and we think we know it all. Well, we're not even at the beginning of knowing these things.
So we're 1 minute out, but would you give us a Celtic blessing?
Oh, I certainly would. Now, this is from about the 5th century in Ireland, and it was used before that. And what this blessing is considered to be a mantle of protection, and this goes on each individual person listening to me right now. I am sending them by telepathy. It is, the words are, Beg Dialat, Agus Gamegtum Yo, Agus Ganairi Tu. And what it means, may God walk with you, may the divine walk with you. Agus Gamegtum Yo, and may you have life within you. Agus Ganairi Tu means, and you rise with purpose with that life.
We will. We will. Thank you so much, Diana Beresford Kroger. Yes, and let's have tea and do rascally things. And thanks always to Rod Akil, wonderful board up, and Diana's website, dianaberesfordkroger.com. Just Google her or search her. Thank you. Such a delight. And coyotenetworknews.com will have all the links to her work. Thank you, Diana. We're in cahoots in perpetuity. May it be so. Oh, wonderful.
It's my honor.
All right.
It's my honor.
Thank you, team.